Hey everyone, welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we revisit a movie that I, for some reason, remembered quite well and is very bizarre. We saw Space Cowboys, the Clint Eastwood, Old Men Going to Space, Screw John Glenn movie, I think? It's weird, it's strangely horny, and there's a a boy band song that lasts 6 seconds on the soundtrack. So, you know, nothing quite like dying on the moon. Thanks for all you guys do to support us. If you're thinking about it, join the Patreon. We now have half dozen movie riffs up there for you, and extra episodes, extra mission briefings, everything you could possibly want, including Matt's How I Would Have Done It extra materials. Thanks for following us on Facebook and Twitter as well. Letterboxd, I'm updating it constantly. Maybe you get some hints as to what's coming next. And then finally, just thanks for listening. Thanks for being here. Bye, guys. Welcome to Myopia Movies. This week we watched Space Cowboys from 2000. Clint Eastwood pretending he's as old as Tommy Lee Jones. I'm Nick Hoffman, host of Myopia and Riff on Center Prov on panel. We have
Jeremy,
Lauren,
Matthew W. Quinn,
and this is a Clint Eastwood movie where old people go to space. I thought of this because I remember seeing it in theaters. This was 2000, so I was in 9th or 10th grade, depending on, this seems like a summer release. It just is such a bizarre movie.
Let's just call this Mood Whiplash, the movie. The first two-thirds of it are, ha ha ha, old people, and then the last third of it is like Hunt for the Red October.
Yeah, there's a nuclear weapons conspiracy espionage plot here that never gets sorted out. Like, Bob Gerson goes free. War criminal Bob Gerson, I guess? I don't know.
Well, the way it's set up, most of the movie, it sounded like he and the Russian guy, he had been a traitor or something decades earlier, but it seems more like they robbed him.
Yeah, but I think that's fake. I think he made up a lie. Yeah, no, that's weird. We'll get there. Laura, you're the guest. Do you want to give us a plot synopsis?
Sure. So the movie starts out with Team Delius, are these astronaut pilots, and they're testing out spaceships and how the flight is. There's Hawk, Tank, you know, they have all these names and all these nicknames, right? Mm-hmm. And Hawk's like the rebel, I guess, and he decides to take the pilot farther than it should, the airplane, and it spins out, and they fight, and they come down, and Clint Eastwood punches Tommy Lee Jones. And all that, and they fight, and so they think they're going to space, but then the NASA program announces that they're actually going to send a monkey, and so they fall out, and they don't talk for really long time, forever, and so leads up to 2002, I believe it's supposed to be the current year, right? Yeah.
Yeah, present year.
Present year, and there's this satellite that is going out into space that has been out of orbit. Is what they call decaying, and they had to get it back into orbit or to safe and to help. And it's this old communication system from the 1950s. And so the only people they know that can use this navigation system and can help with this mission is this Team Delius. And so they contact Clint Eastwood, and he rounds up his old troops and everything to get together. And they have to train and do physical and so on and so on. So then it starts from there. And then they go on the actual mission. And just a lot happens. But that's the main plot. That's the main plot that happens.
So this is written by a guy named Ken Kaufman. And I was just looking him up because I'm trying to do better. I think every single movie he does involves space or a monkey. he did Muppets in Space before this. Then he did Space Cowboy. Then he did Curious George. And he did In the Army Now.
Oh my God. Wow.
Okay, we've done Muppets in Space, and we're doing Space Cowboys. Is In the Army Now a Stay Tuned? Yeah. I remember watching it. I remember seeing it on the bus of the Boy Scout event or something.
We do not have to be a completionist for Kyle Kaufman, whatever I said his name was. But yeah, okay, so we got to talk about this when they start out in like grayscale, showing their past. First of all, this filter is terrible.
Yeah, that's definitely a trademark of later day Clint Eastwood, where he just drains all the color. Like, obviously this is black and white flashback, but in his later movies, even the present day are just desaturated to hell, and it's a weird stylistic choice because
I mean, like, I saw the mule, like, it's practically like they didn't finish painting it,
like, yeah, like, and he worked
on colorblind.
I'd have to imagine, because he works with good cinematographers who've done colorful work, but this, he's just like, get rid of the colors.
Also, it's highly unsettling. Did you notice that the adult actors, the old actors, were voicing these young guys?
Yeah.
And so Tommy Lee Jones is like this up-and-coming 23-year-old someone. And this 65-year-old voice is coming out of this kid's mouth. It's very unsettling.
Yeah, that was an odd choice.
I have a question. Please. This was 2000. This was the height of NSYNC. I'm just saying. And they play it, the Space Cowboy song,
which was for this movie, right?
For 25 seconds. And Clint Eastwood directed this. So I'm just asking, the 2000 was the height of NSYNC fever. Do you think they were like, okay, they have this song that we need to put in? Like, which came first, this script or that song? Like, did they make the script from that song? You know what I mean? Like,
I wonder if they didn't make it for the movie, right?
Right.
This movie had to have been made to cash in on John Glenn going back into space as an old man.
Right, which happened just a couple years before. The album is the same year, so I think they made it whatever. But, yeah. Like, to that end, the whole rest of this soundtrack is nothing but, like, orchestral, like, strings. And then for 35 seconds, they're dramatically walking into NASA to an NSYNC song. That screams studio note to me. They're
yeah.
Like, you have to do this. And Clint's like, I don't want
and
to
the
do
beginning
this.
And the very end is Fly Me to the Moon. That's it. And in between is orchestra. Just an observation.
It's just so silly. Anyway, the scene, like you mentioned, they blow up the plane. It goes to black and white. These tiny children, man, are talking to each other. And again, this is a fantasy world in which Clint Eastwood is younger than, or the same age as all these other men who are clearly decades older than him. I guess most specifically, the ranking major. Oh God, what's that actor's name? Bob Gerson.
Oh, James Cromwell.
James Cromwell is like a decade younger than him, and he's the commanding officer. And they give him the birthmark, at least. He looks kind of like a young Clint Eastwood. But yeah, then they troll him by saying you're being replaced by Marianne of the Monkey. It's a very silly scene. And very cruel. Bob Gerson's an asshole. We learned this right now. He has to shake the monkey.
Also known as, this is a movie in which a bunch of old men still, at some point, physically fight with each other over grudges dating back like 40-some years.
We flash forward. I guess, unless you guys want to talk more about their childhood. I mean, like, they fight, they get fired, they say their mission's accomplished, and then we cut to Clint Eastwood fighting with a garage door opener.
And about to have old man sex with his wife.
Yeah, well, trying to get it on.
He's trying to lay pipe with Barbara Babcock.
Maybe I should turn you on for a few cycles.
And she's like, oh, help!
I'm with a dirty old
dirty
man.
Dirty old man.
Oh, gross.
Gross.
That's all gross.
Oh, sorry, honey. NASA's here.
Are we interrupting something?
Not this year. No, wait. Before you get to them opening the garage door somehow, what was the line? He goes, honey, I don't need a manual. It was written in Japanese by a Japanese guy.
Oh, yeah.
Translated by a gringo and then retranslated into Japanese. And you're just like, what the hell are you talking? A gringo?
Well, maybe they live in the California somewhere.
Of Japan? The California of Japan? Anyway, and then...
Yeah, that reminded me of his El Camino character, for sure.
Yeah, like, I guess the trademark... Don't open that door again, man.
For you listeners, Nick's poor cat is locked up in the door, and it's really bothering Matthew.
It's really bugging him.
Both Matthew and the cat are okay. No worries.
This is fine. They're going to make it. They're going to make it. You may have seen this woman on Dr. Quinn Medicine Woman in Far and Away. With Nicole Kidman. Anyway...
Oh, who plays his wife?
The wife.
Oh, okay.
The wife is in stuff. Again, Clint Eastwood, age-appropriate wife. That's okay.
The movie in which 60-year-old men hit on 40-year-old women.
Clint Eastwood's 75 right. In this. Let's be clear. Clint Eastwood turned 90 this year.
Wow. Okay. Yeah, so Clint Eastwood rounds up all his old buddies. Donald Sutherland. James.
Cromwell? James Garner.
James Garner. James Garner was first. He's a preacher now.
A terrible preacher.
I thought they were going for some sort of Alzheimer's thing because he keeps forgetting his lines.
No, Matt, you're missing it. That's comedy gold. You see, he's making classic jokes by forgetting lines, dropping stuff, being a generic old man. And again, James Garner, younger than Clint Eastwood. I can't emphasize how everyone in this, we haven't even gotten to William Devane yet for some reason, just chewing. He's just chewing.
Donald Sutherland tests roller coasters. So James Garner's the Reverend. Donald Sutherland tests roller coasters and is the horniest old man. And then finally, Tommy Lee Jones is the last that he rounds up.
He's a crop duster.
Mm-hmm.
So we get to James Garner's church, and it's like this generic, awful church. I guess he's supposed to be Catholic?
I think they said he was Baptist.
Lutheran, I thought.
Lutheran?
I thought they said Lutheran.
They said he was Baptist, generic Christian. They keep making jokes about what the cross and rocket mean.
That's right. Eventually, they do this thing where he notices Clint Eastwood in the congregation. And so he goes, that reminds me of space. And he just starts telling a space story, which people are actually listening to him for the first time. So that's kind of great.
So the old man upstairs said, why the hell not?
And I will say, James Garner, I don't know if he's like the oldest, but he's one in clearly the worst shape. And you get, like, he just, they don't let him move much. And I don't think he could. So they give him the arm when we get to the space. But even when, like, they're doing the Star Trek thing and people are falling all over the place, James Garner just looks mildly seasick. I feel kind of bad for him. But yeah, the one we should talk about, though, is Donald Sutherland. Donald Sutherland is, I guess, an engineer. And he's testing roller coasters and making notes, which you'd think they would have done before he actually wrote it, built the damn thing. But he's, like, recording into a tape recorder. There's this kind of youngish woman, probably in her mid-30s, who's there waiting for him. And your dad's a brave man. He goes, yes, he is. And they start making out, and you're just like, wow. Horny Donald Sutherland with his long ponytail thing he's got rocking and these Coke bottle glasses. My goodness. And then, of course, the final one, there is Tommy Lee Jones. How are we introduced to Tommy Lee Jones?
He's taking some kid on a flight in his plane, and the kid pukes birthday. Everywhere.
Yeah, it's my birthday.
Makes a kid puke on the plane.
So much puke. And then he helps the kid save face in front of his girlfriend, which is, it's just a weird scene.
So he's a wingman in multiple senses.
As he is. There should have been, I mean, that's why it couldn't have been Donald Sutherland, because Donald Sutherland would have stolen the girlfriend.
Right.
Would you like to go flying? I will be naked for most of this movie somehow. And he goes on Letterman and talks about being horny to... Or not, Leno. To Jay Leno.
Talking about helping women unlock their infinite supply of orgasms.
It's just cringeworthy.
Well, let's see. Decades of skill, but much less physical capability.
Matt, you do not have to talk about old men banging. You really don't. Matt's like making notes about his next book. But no, it's just very bizarre watching him be horny after they discover what's going on. Tommy Lee Jones, after making the kid puke, hears the offer as he's literally wiping the vomit off of his plane to go to space. He nearly gets Clint Eastwood and a trucker killed as he runs them off the road. And he goes to the roadhouse. And he's drinking some Bud Heavies or whatever. Or no, Miller Lite is all over this.
They all meet, so they decide to go with the mission, and they have to pass all their physicals and do all the tests. So you see old man butt.
You do see so much old man butt.
So much old man butt.
Donald Sutherland's weird pear-shaped body is just like, look at my penis. My penis. And, he, of
and
course,
then they have a female doctor, and they're all appalled by it. That kind of made me laugh.
I mean, yeah, they were shocked. And again, Donald Sutherland does not cover up his genitals. And doesn't James Garner look at it and say, don't feel bad?
Something like that.
Dick jokes. Dick jokes.
Shouldn't Morgan Freeman be in this? I feel like he's the only one missing.
Well, I will say, yeah.
This would be right up his wheelhouse, right?
He could have at least moved. Again, I feel bad for James Garner, who's so stiff.
It was, in fact, not his wheelhouse.
It was. There was some crazy alternative casting here. I'm trying to find what it was.
Well, they find that everyone's dead, too. That they kept missing a lot. All the old astronauts and all the old staff they kept mentioning were either dead or dying. So that's another reason they had to bring back this old group.
Exactly. So I guess we really haven't even gotten to what happened. So why do they have to go to space? Does anyone, like, we figured out later that there's a Russian satellite.
Name Icon, yeah.
Right, and for whatever reason, it's kind of like dead in the air. There's a breaking down of their navigation system, and turns out the navigation system was actually the same one that was on Skylab, which Clint Eastwood just happened to design. Which I thought he was just a test pilot. Whatever, he's also a super genius. This has, like, Armageddon syndrome, where, like, he has to be the smartest person who's ever lived. And the best pilot, which becomes the ending of this. The stupid, stupid ending of this. And so, he's like, we need my original cast, like you said. But we immediately get shifty eyes on everyone. The second they mention the satellite, everyone's like, yeah, I don't know how that happened. How crazy.
Right.
Crazy. Yeah, sorry, you can go ahead. Take it.
Well, so in regards to the satellite, the reason they have to go up to fix it is because they can't let it burn up in the atmosphere because it's too big and it won't completely burn up and will crash into Earth. Right. And they can't bring it back on a spaceship because it's too heavy, because after it was put in space, they modified it and made it heavier.
Modification.
Yeah, so that's why they have to go up and fix it.
Modification.
Yes.
And then he twirls his mustache because he's totally not evil. We also have to, you know, I guess, talk about the one female character in this entire movie, really. It's what's her name?
Sarah.
Yeah, Sarah, the one who is the flight director assistant. No.
She's an engineer of some kind.
Yeah, Capcom. It's played by Marcia Gay Harden, who's got the worst haircut I've ever seen.
Is she the bad robot from Blade Runner 2049?
No.
No.
Because she looks exactly like her.
You just mean the bad haircut, which is fine.
And the facial structure. Or maybe, no, it's not Amelie.
No.
No. This is the second Clint Eastwood movie she did. I think she was in Mystic River, right?
Yep.
She goes into the locker room, the men's locker room, to tell Tommy Lee Jones that the time of the training has changed, and he's in his towel, and then he thinks that's a great time to ask her out for a beer, and then they like go out and have a beer. And he's like telling her about his ex-wife, and then they like make out. It's very
I don't think she's his ex-wife. I think she's dead, and that is a major plot point.
Yeah, former wife, I mean.
Dead wife, widow. Dead
former wife.
Because everyone has to die in this film.
Exactly.
I mean, eventually, of course, the youngest of them all, Tommy Lee Jones, who's the one with cancer, we find out later.
Right.
God.
Yeah, because he doesn't want to just be put on chemo and slowly waste away. He wants to go out with a bang.
Which he does, by blowing up the moon, or whatever.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, that's something they never addressed. Like, the nuclear warheads are still in orbit at the end.
No, they crash into the moon, but they don't look like they go off.
Yeah, but they still can, I would imagine, somehow.
I would assume, like, it just
smashed to bits on the
moon.
Yeah,
I don't understand why he went to the moon. Wouldn't he go to deep space? Go to deep space, right?
I think
maybe so they can retrieve him later.
Well, if they're in deep space, they just keep going and going and going, and he might come back. You smash them to the moon, there's not a problem.
Because there's not a moon.
You can't. You'd need a lot to blow up the moon.
What? No, you wouldn't. The moon's made of cheese.
That's right. Oh. It's hollow. It's filled with a Nazi airbase, I think.
Don't you mean the lizard people?
Pink Floyd's in it. I mean.
Yeah. Well, they had a war over the moon at some point. Pink Floyd, the lizard people, and the Nazis. They
the Transformers.
The Transformers.
And the Transformers. They divided up into spheres of influence. And it's hollow, so you can fit more people in it.
Mm-hmm. So Frank's character was originally going to be Warren Beatty.
Oh, God.
Did he die?
I'm just looking. Because this was a movie that I think ended up like being like doodled around with for a long time. I mean, you get Clint Eastwood in here, it just doesn't seem like a Clint Eastwood like kind of picture.
No.
Although apparently he did the soundtrack, just playing his piano. I guess that means he wrote the NSYNC song. I don't know. Next, we get to the comedic kind of second part where they're training and doing their testing, right? Find out that Tommy Lee Jones has 2010 vision, Clint Eastwood has 2020 vision, and Donald Sutherland is blind as hell.
But I remembered the. I have
he just memorized the eye chart.
I have a great memory. Fine, whatever. Meanwhile, James Garner does not participate.
And he's like, to the doctor, let me take you out for oysters. Like, I don't know.
Anyway. Yeah, I mean, would that work? An 85-year-old man come up to you and ask you for a oyster? This is just, it's so weird. Like, I get it. Old people can do whatever we can do, I guess. But
that bastard John Glenn went up 2 years ago.
Right.
Asshole.
Like, you're just like, all right. And then he just starts punching people who look like Bob Gerson. Like, it's just, his character motivation here is very bizarre. Luckily, every character tells us what his flaw is, that he's not a team player. Every single person comes up to him and says he's not a team player. So there we have
it. He's like Dirty Harry in space, the geriatric version.
Well, I mean, he does have essentially one character he plays a lot, like in Trouble with the Curve, where he's an astronaut who looks at like pitchers and works for the Braves, I think. Mm-hmm. I didn't bother.
Yeah, that was me.
Someone else can talk. We're up to the
yeah. Thing. So meanwhile they're training alongside younger astronauts and they keep trolling each other. Like at one point the younger astronauts order a bunch of insures for them, and they retaliate by ordering them baby food and picture books.
Well, which why is there a waiter in the NASA cafeteria anyway?
This guy is like, loving his job seems... too. He's like, this insure came from those people over there.
Yeah.
Oh, and what does Donald Sutherland say? It's really good for my libido. And he's just like, can you stop?
Yeah, it's good for my libido. After he takes out his dentures.
Why? All of this.
I am amazed there was not one Viagra joke in this.
I mean, do you think there was one?
Was there no ball joke? I was waiting for it. Like
there
old
what?
Old man balls.
Just no. Dangling. Just,
yeah.
And at one point they perv on a waitress and you're like getting a fight with a biker.
Oh no, this is that's a weird scene. We have this, I mean, eventually they go to another roadhouse of one sort or another, like kind of a bar. Donald Sutherland is getting some tail again. James Garner gets an animal, a stuffed animal from a claw machine. It goes rawr. Meanwhile, Tommy Lee Jones and Clint Eastwood are playing pool. And they ask the waitress which one she wants to have sex with. Now, that's bad.
They ask you, which one do you take home? And she says, you mean retirement home?
Oh, so good.
Solid joke there.
Solid good. Yeah, solid joke. And then after sexually harassing this woman, her friend comes up and goes, you bothered my friend? And he goes, listen, Tiny. No, dude, you're in the wrong here. Leave the woman alone. But then they get into a fight instead. Which, you know, I guess is funny. Old men fighting.
In Battlestar Galactica, the new one, they had Adama and Ty get into a fight at one point. It's these two old men doing military combatives. It was hilarious. So, yes, old man fighting is hilarious.
Okay. Well, we have scientific results. I mean, here it was weird. The joke is they cut to the next day and they both have black eyes.
Yeah.
Because they both fell in the shower. I mean,
that's what my patients tell me too. It's not ever true.
Is there some sort of old person fight club you think is going on at the hospital?
No. Anyways, we'll talk later, Matthew. I'm talking about when you find stuff. Anyway, yeah. So they then I think after that Frank and Hawk kind of bond.
They do.
And they find out that they were never going to send them up, that the bad guy, Bob, wasn't ever going to send them up. So then they get mad and he says, like, if Hawk doesn't go, I don't go.
Right.
And you find out that Hawk has cancer
Hawk has cancer. And about this time as well, the fact that these old guys are the astronauts also leaks. I might have my order a little bit up, but leaks, this was supposed to be a secret mission because they're shooting a Russian, they're trying to save a Russian satellite, but we don't know why. But you see, there's like this weird paparazzo guy in a car taking pictures of them trying to jog.
Yeah, it's like, finally, 20 years of staking out NASA, I found something good.
I thought it was one of the younger astronauts who's trying to sabotage them.
I thought that too. It's Roger.
Yeah, it is Roger?
Uh-huh. I think it was the younger astronaut leaks it.
The inside Roger. Man.
Yes, the inside man.
I mean, I guess we could also mention here at this point, you said on the other team, the only one I think who's anyone, Roger, is Courtney B. Vance. Mm-hmm. Very young Courtney B. Vance, but, you know, he's fine in this. The white guy, Ethan, is Lauren Dean. I have no idea. I mean, this is also where we get up to our Jay Leno cameo just about as well. Because once they...
Remember Jay Leno, everyone?
I know. You want to talk about something that ages this movie?
He looks so young.
I know.
Jay Leno never looked young.
Well, it's that hair. He went salt and pepper early, but like... So, what are you guys doing in space? Yeah. He goes, did you know that a man can give a woman seemingly endless orgasms? And you're just like, all right, let's cut to commercial.
I understand you have a military experience, north or south.
Yes, two-thirds of this movie is old man jokes. It plays a comedy until then things get very serious very fast.
Yeah, yeah, that's true.
He has cancer and he's going to blow up the moon.
No, because they...
I remembered a line here about blowing up the moon, though. It goes, everyone was real proud when Buzz and Neil walked on the moon. All I wanted to do was kill myself.
Meanwhile, asshole Gerson and the Russian general are conniving about something. We don't find out till later just what it is.
Yeah, but to me, we need something from Bob Gerson. Because like, we don't know if he's working with the Russians. We don't know if they have something over on him. We don't know if he only thinks that there are missiles there. Like, I want him arrested for treason at the end of this. So there's like, there's something. But at the end, all we do is cut to the moon with like a dead dude on it. We have a corpsicle finale.
Because it turns out that wasn't a Russian communication satellite. That was actually a Cold War nuclear platform.
That's right.
That has a dead man trigger. Like, if it dies, it's going to start shooting nukes.
And specifically at major American cities, which would probably be a negative, I would guess.
And Ethan, one of the younger astronauts, is actually in on it, or was going to try and hide it from Clint Eastwood or something like that. Like, Gerson wanted him to go up and not Clint Eastwood. He just wanted him to learn everything from Clint Eastwood he could.
Yeah, I couldn't tell if he was trying to set them off or to hide it.
His motivation makes zero sense.
Right.
Why does he try to subvert the plan when Clint Eastwood knows what he's doing? It's weird. I don't know. Like, I guess he's the inside guy, but does that mean he's a Russian spy? It'd be really easy. Back then, we were doing joint missions. Get an actual Russian.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Like... You know, it's, again, 2 years before this when Armageddon came out. Like, that's what they did. They just picked up that dude in Mir. Like, that works. I guess we were talking about this being, like, these weird Clint Eastwood movies. Yeah, this could be more 2000. There was also a thing about space movies at this time. Obviously, Armageddon is before.
Yeah, this reminded me a lot of Deep Impact, like the space nuclear thing. Yeah.
And the old guy's up there is like, now I know you don't like me because I'm old. That's Robert Duvall in that one.
Yes.
Yeah, it was.
Yes.
Wow. I remember almost nothing about that movie.
You're fine.
Yeah.
I mean, that is a good, like, hangover, like, Sunday afternoon. Like, I just need to take a nap, and that's a nice, quiet movie. That and Contact. You could take some world-class naps during those.
Hey, Contact is great.
I love Contact.
But it is the quietest, softest little movie.
Which is weird for Robert Zemeckis.
It is. Like... but isn't there... Okay, what's that one where Harlan Williams goes to Mars?
Rocket Man?
That's a stay tuned and a half. Like, yeah. Event Horizon is out here. Like, we're going to space left and right, baby. And, I mean, this is all beef footage.
Wasn't Mars Attacks around this time? Right?
Mars Attacks was 95.
96. That was a little earlier.
But still, like, early. 4 years, we just mentioned 8 major motion pictures that are all set in space. I mean, Apollo 13, of course, precedes all this, which is where they get, I mean, I don't give a lot of credit to Ron Howard as a director, but Apollo 13 is fine. I think it's very good, and it clearly set all this off.
And somebody mentioned B-roll footage, and yes, there's the rocket launch footage is obvious, like NASA TV footage. So is the landing of the shuttle. Spoiler.
And so is the shot from the International Space Station, where you see it streaking across the sky from above. I mean, obviously, like, he's not Tom Cruise. He's not really actually going to try to land a space shuttle, which I think is the plot of the next one.
No, that's actually not a Mission Impossible movie, but it would make sense for it to be. I mean,
wait, isn't he going to space in the next Mission Impossible movie?
Yeah,
different movie.
It's he wants to shoot the movie in space.
No, he's going to space. It's just not a Mission Impossible movie.
So he saw Gravity, and he's like, you know, I could do that. But for real.
Yeah.
So he's really going to... that. Gravity is fun. It's not a great movie, but it is a lot of fun.
Tom Cruise wants to fly up to space and meet Xenu.
I'm going to take you back to their homeworld. That's Tom Cruise. That's all I got. It's just a big, it's just a big toothy chuckle.
You know, there's
Tom Cruise is in a bunch of shit right now.
You know, there's a couch you can jump on, Nick, if you'd like.
No.
Did you hear about Tom Cruise?
Were you freaked out about the COVID people?
Yeah.
Good for him.
Freaked out on his whole, freaked out on his whole crew. I don't know. Yeah. It's wild.
Yeah, I saw that. And like him just yelling. That was some intense Instagram footage.
Sure was. Anyway.
I mean, to be fair, at this point, he's as old as Tommy Lee Jones was in this movie? He's like,
he had to create his own insurance company because no one would insure him for doing his own stunts because he's so old.
Well, and if he dies, he sinks the production. And if you're like doing something like, again, a Mission Impossible movie that costs $250 million to make, if Tom Cruise dies, you had a lot of money. So he has to create an insurance company to stroke his idiotic ego.
But the next Mission Impossible is in space?
Well, no, his next movie is in space.
I
stood corrected.
Anyway.
But yeah, I mean, so at this point, we start training for the mission. We have a spinning,
spinning vortex, G-force,
That was why they went to the bar, because whoever passed out first had to buy the other beer.
And they got up to 400 Gs or something, and then they passed out. I mean, and the other thing, too, like, I guess this is a movie not only with old people, but for old people. Did you notice how many times they would, like, make the same joke about, like, at first Donald Sutherland goes, I think he looks younger. And then James Garner was like, it really gets your wrinkles out. He looks younger. And you're just like... you made the joke. Is this for Alzheimer's patients? Like, did you need to keep repeating them? Maybe. Because we do the exact same scene. Mm-hmm. They do the flight simulator, right? And he tries to go manual without a computer. Tommy Lee Jones lands the shuttle. At the end of the movie, not only does
Clint foreshadowing. Do it, it's foreshadowing.
But it's the exact same dialogue, too. It's like you just switched the roles. And he lands it the exact same way. And you're just like, guys, you don't... like, I get it. It does save time when you just copy and paste pages of a script. But you shouldn't do it. At this point, obviously they're going to pass all the tests and we're going to shoot the old people into space. Donald Sutherland's, D is so good that his new girlfriend buys him sunglasses with his prescription in them. And, James Garner barely moves.
And... then when they dock with, the death machine and Ethan, who's the inside man for the Russians, or Gerson, or both, tries to mess with the machine against orders, it activates and nearly destroys the space shuttle.
Yeah, so they first are suspicious when this giant thing that looks like a floating spark plug in space, they ping it with the radar, it activates and starts to swivel around. They don't know why, so they turn everything off. Courtney B. Vance at this point, I think, gets knocked unconscious somehow.
They're like, oh, Roger's bleeding and he has a concussion.
And again,
he's just like floating.
I have to first say, the space acting is terrible. Like, obviously they just kind of move slow. Occasionally Donald Sutherland comes in like it's pop-up video, says something and floats back out. But when they're launching, they're just sitting there. They barely jostle. They're just, let's move slow. That's the whole space acting. Mm-hmm. And here, when they do the Star Trek shake and people get injured, the young people are flinging around. The old people are just kind of barely moving. And that's it. There's so little direction here, and I know it's his trademark, but mm-hmm. it's particularly noticeable here that he's just like, we're doing it once. I need a nap. We're doing it once. So they go to space.
Everything goes smoothly. The liftoff.
The
they attach the arm to the satellite. Everything goes smoothly until they realize there are nuclear bombs on this.
Yeah, and they freak out, and NASA sees the camera through their mask, and he asks for advice on what to do. At this point, the young guy who works for it, whatever his name is, you know, Chisel McHardchest. And what it does is he tries to fix it, and trying to fix it, there's like a short, I think, and he blasts off into space, activating the device, which arms it, and it like damages the space shuttle. It kills that kid, I think. Mm-hmm. At this point, Hines gets injured when something falls off. Roger gets injured when something lands on the thing, and he bangs his head, and he's unconscious, and blah, blah, blah. They strap him to the wall. There's your one black character. He's strapped and unconscious for the rest of the movie. Anything? I feel...
We're all very tired at this point, so things start to get a little confusing.
Yeah, we're old.
But we're
old men in space.
I think enough of the rockets are damaged that someone has to stay behind to guide the Soviet Death Star into the moon, and Clint Eastwood. Tommy Lee Jones, who's dying of cancer anyway, is like, yeah, I'm going to go to the moon now.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, as a child, he wished on the monkey's paw, I want to go to the moon.
So
it came true in the worst way
possible.
I don't understand.
Why would you go to the moon and not deep space to blow up the rocket? So it's far away from Earth and from human life.
Because it could conceivably loop-de-loop on another planet and come back. So you want to smash it into the moon so all those nukes get turned into chunky bits.
Also, that's not what happens. It's even weirder than that. So at this point, they realize the only thing that they can do is literally attach, like they said, because they only have one of the rockets that's supposed to help it get back into orbit. Everything else has been damaged. So Tommy Lee Jones takes his little jetpack, straps him to the space shuttle, to the satellite, fires the satellite, and then apparently when he's 10,000 miles out, he launches the missiles so they don't have enough fuel to get back to Earth. That's what they said.
Got it.
And so it doesn't hit the moon, only he hits the moon with his rocket pack and the rest of the satellite. And that's what we see in the final shot, as well as him taking a nap on the moon, which I guess we'll get to at the end. Now we've got to get home, and unfortunately everyone with skill is unconscious on the floor, and... And Tommy Lee Jones is heading towards the moon as quickly as he can.
So they got to basically land without the computer and with everything busted, like conveniently during one of the training simulations.
Specifically the one that only Tommy Lee Jones did anything on. So Clint Eastwood, being the smartest and most talented man who's ever lived, does it without practicing the first time. Hooray. James Garner is old, and he reads numbers the entire scene. And Donald Sutherland throws people out of the moving space shuttle. as he straps in the astronauts to presumably a parachute. We don't see a parachute, but presumably a parachute.
Presumably.
They just kind of go limp and flail around as they fall to Earth.
Yeah, one would hope. I mean, Ethan is, if he's even still alive, is unconscious, and... Roger, the black dude, if he's concussed, so
heavily
he's
concussed,
even if he's awake, he's gonna be real fuzzy. Let's hope
wake up plummeting towards Earth.
Let's hope
what the fuck?
They're coherent. Let's hope
they should have been the mid credit stinger.
Let's hope they're
just Roger. Yeah.
Let's hope they're coherent enough to actually pull the parachute.
And Donald Sutherland's like, shit, you've got a bad idea. I'm in. Damn it, I'm in.
Because we're a team.
Yeah, and so James Garner's like, well, I've made my peace with God, so I can just be splattered into the earth. And Donald Sutherland's like, that sounds like a lot of fun. And Clint Eastwood's just like, she's going to hold together.
Put the brakes on it a little bit.
and then for the next 10 minutes, all she's like, no, she's going to hold them together a little longer. Come on, baby,
just
hold
a little longer, yeah.
And then they repeat that, not only that same shot, but the same shot afterwards, with the wings slightly glowing as it heats up. Again, it's for movies for people who, you know, keep dozing off. It reminds you what's happening. And of course, he lands it perfectly. And yeah, that's it.
And he,
Bob Gerson, you know, gets sworn at or whatever.
Yeah, because he and the Russian guy each try to embarrass each other. Like, he brings up the Russians have this treaty-violating nuclear Death Star in orbit. And he's like, yes, and we made it with files stolen from your office.
Yeah, and I think the stolen is emphasized because Bob Gerson sold it to them or gave it to them. I think Bob Gerson has committed treason. That was the feeling I got.
Yeah.
But whatever.
I agree.
Yeah. And then, you know...
The final shot is you see Hawk there on the moon, and they're playing Fly Me to the Moon by Frank Sinatra, and you just see him in his whole astronaut suit. And I was almost curious if they were going to, like, show... his actual dead face or something, or a zombie sequel, or
yeah, the way they cut it, you expect the mask to fly up and
yeah, like, right, or something. Like
he's lying there in the
every space house.
It seems like he landed it intact enough that he could get up and walk away and just lie down
exactly.
nearby. So he's lying there, I guess, as he let the oxygen run out and pass out in the ruins of the death machine. It'd be hilarious if his last move was like a thumb up the camera.
Yeah.
I mean, but like, and that's it. I mean, like, Marcia Gay Harden's like, well, this is the fifth old man that I've fallen in love with and has died in some way. Like, every line of dialogue is about someone dying, and now the first time she had sex with Samuel Jackson. Tommy Lee Jones.
Samuel L. Jackson could have been in this too. This is kind of up his wheelhouse now.
Dude, he just needs to be the engineer in the back row. But when Bob Gerson gets, like, you know, be pants in front of him, he just goes, motherfucker. That's it. That's all he needs.
What are you doing? You know?
And that's kind of Space Cowboys. I don't know. It is what it is. Jeremy, what did you think?
Yeah, it's a fun movie if you don't think about it too much. The whole Russian nuclear warhead angle is odd and kind of unnecessary, but I guess they had to put some tension in at the end. But yeah, I mean, it's enjoyable. It knows it's an old guy in space movie. So yeah.
Got that one down. Old man in space.
So yeah, just watch it. Have a good time. Yeah.
Lauren?
No, it's enjoyable. I liked it. It was way better than I was expecting. I think I remember seeing this in theaters back in the day in, like, ninth grade or something. You know, when you first start going to the movies by yourself with just your friends and without any parents or anything. I think this is one of those that I went to. So, no, better than I thought. I enjoyed it. So, good, lazy Sunday afternoon kind of movie.
Yeah, Matt.
Okay, the old man jokes were pretty funny, I thought. But this movie called Mood Whiplash, because most of the movie is old man in space jokes, and then suddenly it turns into, as I said earlier, The Hunt for the Red October. And the movie was too long. I just kept looking at my watch or playing with my phone. It kind of dragged.
I disagree with almost anything that was said. I thought it was fine. It's just such a weird movie. Like, again, like, it's clearly someone, they even make the joke about John Glenn going into space.
My Opium and Movies is a production of Do Better Podcasting. It is hosted by Nick Hoffman, edited by Nick Hoffman and Daniel Suttis. The theme song is Surf Shimmy by Kevin MacLeod. Find his music on soundtrack.com. It is registered under the Creative 4 license. Our regular panelists are Matthew Quinn, Daniel Suttis, Nick Hoffman, and Jeremy Reiber. Thanks for listening. Please support our Patreon at patreon.com/myopia. Thanks, guys.